It's the Wired.co.uk podcast, episode 88, for Friday the 10th of August, 2012. This week, we peel back our eyelids and squint into the scientific heavens to take a curious look at one of the most important missions to Mars in history. We'll discover why the country that famously introduced a three strikes and you're disconnected anti-piracy bill has declared this law a failure. And Facebook has suddenly decided to allow gambling with real money on its network, but only, it turns out, in the UK. We'll find out why as we touch down our own Martian rover on this week's Planet of Wired News. Ahoy hoy, Nate Laxon with the news klaxon back in the house.
Booyakasha!
Yes, and that booyakasha is Olivia underscore Solan, of course, our associate editor.
I'm a bit humiliated by that, actually. I regret that booyakasha.
Well, last week you were in the capable hooves of Liv, actually, who edited the show. But this week I'm back from my holly bags, so I'm editing it and I will not cut that out.
No, and it'll sound distinctly better, more likely.
We'll see. You'll notice that the tones of Duncan are notable by their absence. Duncan is not here today. He's in France covering an event for us.
Yeah.
So you've just got me and Liv, two people who weren't here last week. So hello, new listeners. These are two regular voices.
Hello.
Hello. And we're going to first start off by talking about curiosity, not the human trait, but the one-ton Martian rover that just landed on the red planet earlier this week. Curiosity, of course, the latest NASA rover. It hit the ground at 0.6 meters per second at 6:15 a.m. That's British time on the 6th of August in a crater near the equator. I didn't even intend that. Of Mars, after 8 years of prep for this mission. This is huge news. Massive success as well for NASA.
It is huge news. What I particularly like about it was the incredible kit it has to help it land.
Oh, this thing is amazing, yeah. And its own little parachute and rocket-powered.
It got lowered by a parachute in a kind of another vehicle, and then the rover got placed onto the ground, and then the vehicle that had lowered it down kind of shot off into another direction to explode or land elsewhere, so it didn't crush it.
Yeah, and it actually got caught by one of the Mars orbiters as it was flying overhead. It took a photo, several photos actually, of the lander going down. So you can see this photo of a parachute with a package underneath it landing on Mars, which was taken by another orbiter over Mars. We've totally arrived. This is the future.
This is the future. So Nate, tell me what exactly is Curiosity on Mars to do?
Curiosity, okay. What it is doing is trying to work out whether Mars has ever had conditions that could support life, as well as look for evidence that past environments could have supported little microbes. Tiny, tiny little, you know, beginnings of life, perhaps.
Yeah.
And it's the fourth rover to hit the red planet. It's also by far the largest. It's got about 10 times more scientific instruments on board than the previous rover, or certainly by weight, I think it's 75 kilograms, which is about 10 times as much as before.
And so what sort of instruments? It's not just a few test tubes, is it?
No. So it's got sensors to probe the atmosphere. Again, what is it with these puns? None of these puns probe the atmosphere. They are literally little probes. It's got a laser to shoot rocks and vaporize small samples of said rocks. It's got a spectrograph that analyzes the vapor that comes off of these rocks, and it works out the chemistry of that particular rock in question. That particular instrument, in fact, is called the ChemCam, which I think is the coolest name of all. It's got a tool that fires X-rays and alpha particles, and they're like helium nuclei, which I can never say. It fires these at rock and soil to work out how the minerals on the planet were formed, and what the minerals that form these objects and things, how they formed, basically, which is pretty cool. And it's also got this other basically mini lab called the SAM tool, which is a sample analysis of Mars. It takes up about half the space on the rover and is basically a super advanced lab that's got a mass spectrometer to separate materials and actually identify the elements in them. It's got a tool that can vaporize soil and rock to analyze those, and a laser spectrometer that measures how much of certain of the lighter elements like carbon, oxygen, and nitrogen are in the local area. So it's in its the samples that it's collected. So loads of amazing tech and loads of cameras as well. That's what's really also cool about this for, you know, the layman like us who just want to sort of look at the pretty pictures. It's got color cameras, it's got video cameras, and it's already starting to send images back. It's really cool and massive. I mean, this thing dwarfs the previous rovers. Like, it is, it's physically huge.
Yeah.
And it weighs a ton, literally.
It literally weighs a ton.
Yeah.
But getting to Mars has been a bit of a challenge in the past. We've had quite a few failed missions, haven't we?
There have been 38 launches to try and reach Mars, but only 19 have succeeded. Russia has had the worst luck. It's not had a total success of any of its missions, unfortunately. There was one that actually did land, I think, in the maybe 70s. I sort of forgotten exactly whenabouts this was, but it managed to touch down and broadcast something for about 15 seconds and then just died.
Oh, that must have been excruciating.
Yeah, so I think they put that down to sort of atmospheric conditions, that it was able to touch down but maybe landed in some kind of a sandy storm or something, and it disrupted sensors, or who knows. But we have now landed this giant rover, and this is arguably the most exciting one yet. Very exciting times. It's got a mission for 2 years, but it's got enough fuel to last for about 14, so we're hoping that this could go on for a decade or more.
Excellent. Can't wait.
The excitement. Liv, let's come back down to Earth. The online marketplace Silk Road has been in the news, specifically our news this week. What's going on with those guys?
Yeah, well, for people who don't know what Silk Road is, it's kind of like an online black market. It's a kind of, it's a site that you can only access using the anonymizing Tor network, so you can't be identified, where your IP address can't be identified, and you can only pay using bitcoins. Now, lots of people have been saying that the Silk Road's been used to sell drugs for ages. It's kind of anecdotally been shown that this is the case. However, some security researchers at Carnegie Mellon University have done a proper study, and they've been analysing the marketplace using scraping technology for the last 6 months or so.
And they found out how much the drug business is worth.
They've discovered that, first of all, that drugs are the most popular item being sold, illegal drugs, I'd say, being sold on the platform, on the website, and that they're selling drugs worth around $1.9 million every single month.
Wow, so just over $1 million.
Just over $1 million. And these are the kind of biggest selling drug is weed and then prescription drugs, including things like ADHD medicine and steroids. But there's also quite a lot of coke, MDMA and heroin being sold.
That's interesting. I find it quite interesting how they're able to calculate this, given that it's in bitcoins, the virtual currency, and that's fluctuated massively in value.
So this was a bit of a challenge, the actual value. So the $1.9 million, there, £1 million, there about £1.2 million, was a quite a rough estimate, because the currency in between October 2011 and July 2012 has fluctuated significantly. So in October last year, one Bitcoin was worth about $2.50, and in July it went up to $9. So they had to do a kind of average over the six months this year, and they came to that figure. But they found that it's a fifth of all of the bitcoins traded on the most popular exchange are actually spent on Silk Road.
Are we implying that Bitcoin is great because it lets people be anonymous in buying their, you know, MDMA from various websites?
That's yes, basically.
There's a fairly sizable sample that suggests that.
I think it was always there was always the implication that bitcoins would be used to buy things that weren't going to be traced. And
there's been a lot of, you know, very legitimate use for Bitcoin, but I don't think it's taken off. I don't think it's been the success that it necessarily set out to be.
Well, here it's doing a roaring trade,
but that inflation alone, $2.50 to $9 in less than a year. I mean, that is not a sustainable inflation rate.
But it did that the previous year and then fell back to zero. It started as 30 cents to the dollar, went up to $49 to the dollar, and then it went right back down to 30 cents. So it's not not the securest of currencies at the moment.
Well, I'll keep buying my heroin with cash.
Yes,
I think is the advice we're giving here.
But what I love are the terms and conditions on the Silk Road site. It says you can't list anything whose sole purpose or is to harm or defraud, such as stolen items or info, credit cards, counterfeit currency, personal info, assassinations, and weapons of any kind. And also, don't list anything related to paedophilia. But otherwise
go nuts.
Yeah.
Interesting. I find it weird that they have made that kind of conscious differentiation between selling weapons and selling heroin.
Yes.
You know,
I think that's a whole can of worms that we could debate for years.
We could. But we'll let the audience debate that for now. We're going to move on and talk about the new French culture minister who thinks that the Hadopi law is a waste of money. This is the new culture minister for France since the Sarkozy administration left and the new one, took residence.
Hollande.
Has said that the three strikes law aimed to combat copyright infringement, but has in fact been too expensive. It was explained to a French paper that 12 million euros a year are needed to keep the Hadopi wheels turning. It takes 60 officers to manage it. It sent over 1 million warning emails to suspected file sharers. 99,000 official letters through the post have been sent to the more serious offenders. It's resulted in only 134 cases being examined for prosecution, and there has been no prosecution so far. And so it has been claimed that this has basically been a abject failure. The quote here is, Hadopi has failed in its mission to develop legal alternatives to piracy. And I think that sets an interesting sort of global precedent, or at least a way of thinking that should be of interest to UK ministers who have suggested that the three strikes law will come into power as soon as 2014. Mm. So, I mean, we've sort of said that this is not the way to tackle piracy and that there are, you know, other ways that are more effective and have been more popular.
Yeah.
But I think this is kind of something of a nail in the coffin, if you ask me.
Yeah. The minister also said that she felt that it was a disproportionate punishment to be cut off from the internet, which is quite interesting. It wasn't just the kind of inefficiency of the method. It was also, she saw it as a kind of fundamental attack on people's human rights.
Yeah. I mean, there's been this debate about whether the internet should be a human right, sort of in the same way that water is.
Yeah.
And it's a debate that we've never really had on the podcast that we probably should have at some point.
We probably should. But yeah, I mean, would you cut off someone's water supply if they were
stealing water?
Stealing water.
Mm.
I don't think you'd be allowed to.
I don't think you'd be allowed to. You'd certainly be slapped on the wrist. But speaking of internet, one little quick thing I wanted to mention. The Valve game store, the Steam game store, which is operated by Valve and sells, it's the biggest PC download provider of paid games in the world, is going to start offering apps, not just games. And this was actually leaked a few weeks ago, and there was a listing that popped up in the mobile app for Steam that showed things like productivity apps and reference and stuff like that. And now it's been confirmed officially that from the 5th of September, you're going to be able to buy applications through Steam and not just games, which means that it's going to be a direct rival to the Mac App Store, for one thing, because it's going to offer them on PC and Mac, as well as the any Windows Store and the things that are going to start appearing on Windows 8, which I think is could really shake up the market, because a lot of people don't like the fact that Apple's App Store is very inclusive and you have to go through all these
checks,
you have to go through all these checks and you have to, you know, give certain cuts and you have to do all this sort of stuff. I think this could be really interesting for people who want their apps on PC and Mac and don't want to be tied to Apple's or Microsoft's gates, if you like. So, interesting. Liv, tell me about cars with autonomous braking.
Yes. Well, quite a few cars already have these, I think it's called autonomous emergency braking technology. And this is when, if a car detects an obstacle using a sensor, it will stop without the person driving the car having to press the brakes down. It's a kind of emergency measure, and it's to prevent you from kind of bumping into bollards or potentially running over someone quickly running into the road. But the European Commission actually wants to bring in regulations to make sure that all new cars that are made after or from 2014 have this technology in them, which is quite a big change, given that only around 20% of cars now currently have this technology.
It's also interesting that I've seen this in person not work.
Yes, you have.
I went over to Sweden about 3 years ago to see, I'll name names, Volvo. And they had got this new car with this sensor technology that had like radar in the front and could detect when an object came past. And they did this demo where they took this brand new car that wasn't even on the market and sent it hurtling at about 30 kilometers an hour or something out of a test tunnel.
Yeah.
And it was meant to detect this lorry that had been fixed into the concrete at the end of this tunnel. It was meant to detect that and stop it in time so that the car didn't hit the back of the lorry. You could probably tell where I'm going here. And the car came hurtling out at 30 miles an hour and smashed straight into the back of the lorry, and the world's media were there. And for a long time, the video that I managed to film of it doing this was one of the most popular stories on our site in history.
But hopefully the technology's improved a little bit since then.
I've seen it work since then, definitely.
Exactly. But they're not actually, the European Commission is not saying it's going to force manufacturers to do this, but it's going to make it a compulsory criterion for cars if they want to get a 5-star road safety rating from the body that issues these things. So it's a pretty... it's a pretty strong incentive to do that.
Yeah, and these things as well, they tend to work, they're designed to be working at sort of, you know, inner town level where you're driving about 30 kilometres an hour or less.
Exactly. And that, apparently that's about 75% of all accidents occur at impacts of under 30 kilometres per hour. So this is exactly the kind of place where this technology could be used. The Commission actually even estimates that road accidents could be cut by 27% from putting this technology in place. I'm not quite sure where they got these figures from, but they did a huge study. And they've made the claim that it could save 8,000 lives per year. But again... This is the kind of cost-benefit analysis they've done of putting these this new law in place.
Well, it's time to autonomously stop the first half because we're going to swing into an ad break. But when we come back, we're going to find out why Facebook has switched the engine on real cash gambling and why it's doing it in the UK.
Wired's second annual summit is coming. Following a sellout debut in 2011, Wired 2012 will feature an incredible lineup of speakers and thought-provoking talks over 2 days in London. The first names have already been announced, so find out more at wiredevent.co.uk.
Tasty ad break as per usual. Now, Liv, this week, interesting bit of news. Facebook is getting into the real money gambling business. Before now, if you spend money through Facebook, you spend it with Facebook credits.
Yeah.
So you can go into like a game store if your local one hasn't been shut down as a result of the administration and buy 10 quid worth of Facebook credits and spend it on sheep and farms and stuff like that. This is going to be the first time that you can spend real money through the system, and it's for gambling. It's a London-based company called Gamesys, and they are launching something called Bingo Frenzy. Notice the use of D in that word, which is the first Facebook app to promote this exchange of real money. But Facebook's only allowing it to be played in the UK, and obviously is adults only as well, which I think is quite fascinating.
It is. Mm. I guess we must be known as a well-regulated market. But
yeah.
I'm wondering if that just means soft touch.
To be honest, I don't think it does. I think we actually do have a fairly well-regulated sort of gambling industry in the UK. And the head of gaming for Europe at Facebook said that, quote, gambling is very popular and well-regulated in the UK, adding, for millions of bingo users, it's already a very social experience, so makes sense to offer that. And I actually think that makes a lot of sense to a certain extent. And how many times in the day do you, well, on the day, but maybe in the evening, do you see these sort of bingo ads on the TV?
Yeah, and on big newspapers like The Sun, bingo was a huge revenue stream. I'm sure it still is for the newspaper. And it is a type of gaming that's always been social.
Yeah.
And that's an obvious route for Facebook, I think.
And I think, you know, would you necessarily want to be gambling Facebook credits? I mean, one of the problems I found with credits, and this applies to, you know, Xbox Live credits, Microsoft points, is that it doesn't feel like you're spending real money.
Yeah.
It feels like you've spent that money and the credits you've got are just yours to throw away and play with. Whereas when it's real money, I think you feel a bit more of a connection to that money and maybe a little bit more careful on how you spend it.
Yeah.
But Facebook's got to be really careful because, of course, you can sign up to Facebook at 13 or over. You can only gamble at 18 or over. So it's got to put in a whole load of gates and requirements and things to make sure that under 18s aren't going to be able to use this system.
But thankfully, they've got all of your details, so they can quite easily segment their audience.
They have. But the other thing is that traditionally with games, you know, if you make Farmville or something and you buy new donkey or something.
Yeah.
It might show up in my feed that, you know, Olivia has bought a new donkey. Why don't you go and give it a carrot? You don't necessarily want to say, Liv has just won £1,000 on a bingo frenzy.
Yeah.
Why not challenge her? Like you would with maybe Words with Friends. So what they're doing is they are making sure that the friends of any gamblers, if they're under 18, they're not going to see any kind of promotion for the gambling tool. So it's a very multi-leveled protection. It's not just stopping one person playing it. It's actually stopping it being advertised to minors.
And one of the kind of criticisms was that the game itself has some very kind of childish looking characters, doesn't it?
That look
quite appealing to kids if they were to see them.
Well, you know what? They've actually, there were complaints to the Advertising Standards Authority in the UK saying that the adverts for this and the actual design of the game was in breach of the gambling advertising rules. In the UK, it's not legal to advertise gambling with sort of imagery or wording and things like that that could attract underage people.
Yeah.
And the logos and the little mascots for this game are like these little cute, furry, coloured, little mushy monster type critters, like the kind of thing you would see on Neopets or on Farmville, to be honest. And it has been argued that by using that kind of imagery, it makes it attractive to children and therefore is in breach. GameSys has sort of said, not true, that they're fully compliant with ASA rules and doesn't advertise to under 18s. So, we're yet to see whether or not that's actually going to go ahead. But I think it's interesting. I think it's a. I mean, I don't disagree with it, to be honest. I don't have a problem with gambling at all.
It's not like it's hard if you wasn't available on Facebook.
No.
It's incredibly easy to find real money gambling at the kind of touch of a button. So it's.
I just think that there's a certain level of double standards here. For example, you can have photos taken down on Facebook if you're showing slightly too much skin.
Yeah.
You know, there have been occasions where there have been photographs of, a lady breastfeeding a child, and although most of the breast was obscured, if too much was being shown, then people have seen those photos be removed. And I think, well, okay, fair enough if you're trying to keep it all as a kind of,
wholesome,
13 and up friendly, I can sort of get on board to a certain extent.
Yeah.
But if you're now having gambling parts of the site that are strictly 18 plus.
Maybe you'll start having kind of.
Does that create a double standard? You know,
then
I
you have start having
does.
Sex areas of the site which are 18 plus or.
That's potentially, the next step. I mean, and to be honest, if they did that, I wouldn't necessarily think it's a bad thing. I don't think it's a bad thing to have age walls.
No.
I think that, Facebook is so much becoming this kind of meta web. It's like a self-contained little worldwide web in its own right with its own, currency and its own, you can read The Guardian on it and then you go and play games on it, then you message a friend with it. Like, it's all, you can basically live in it.
Yeah.
Why not extend some of the other things that are on the web into this?
But I have to say, by putting these age walls in place, what I could imagine would happen would be there might be more people setting up fake profiles to access them. And this is a problem that has been in the press recently with Facebook, are these kind of fake or unused profiles where people have set up fake names and they're not actually their real selves with all their photos. And I think that could create a surge in demand for these fake profiles. And that's something that they've got to be careful about because it then starts getting spammy.
But I think as well, then there is a certain reliance that Facebook would need to put on banks because, 13-year-olds don't have credit cards. In fact, I don't think you can sign up with gambling stuff on credit cards. I think it has to be debit.
I
actually think that's I'm completely off note right now, but
I
think it might be the case. Either way, pretty interesting. We'll see what happens. We'll see if this starts a new trend. Let us know what you think. Should gambling be allowed on Facebook? Will you gamble on Facebook? And various other questions that are similar to that, I'm sure you have an answer to. Facebook.com/wired.uk. Do let us know what you think, or podcast@wired.co.uk. Liv, Iran, it's going to be an intranet society, according to certain stories.
Yeah, well, Iran's been talking about this for a while. I think since about 2011, early that year, it's been talking about creating a kind of national internet, which would be kind of closed off from everybody else. But the Minister of Communications and Information Technology, Reza Taqipour, has actually confirmed that from September, all of the government ministries' websites will go offline and will form part of this kind of national intelligence network. So that means they will no longer be part of the World Wide Web.
Now, this, to me, seems like a quite figuratively a step backwards. When the internet started, it was the ARPANET. It was run by DARPA, and it was more of a sort of military government sort of thing that then extended outwards and became networked, and that became the internet. This seems like going back to that.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of exactly what it is. The minister actually said that he wanted to shield the country from the untrustworthy World Wide Web that rests in the hands of one or two specific countries, and I'm presuming the US is one of those countries that's been mentioned. He made a nod to security breaches such as the Stuxnet and Flame viruses that have infected Iran's infrastructure.
From the US government.
Stuxnet was from the US government and it affected their nuclear power stations, didn't it?
Yeah.
In Iran, or nuclear, was it power stations or was it nuclear facilities?
It was
facilities?
One of their nuclear facilities, yeah.
Yeah. And he actually said it's particularly unreliable in times of crisis, which suggests, you know, things like the Arab Spring. The fact that they've talked about this for a while, it's very interesting that they're really committing to it now. And I think it's for the citizens of Iran, it's fairly worrying. But it's interesting to note that the country's supreme leader, Ayatollah Khamenei. Oh, no, I don't say that.
I used to be in a band called Ayatollah.
Did he?
Yeah.
What kind of band?
It's kind of a rock band. We played like Incubus and Radiohead covers, things like that.
Maybe that they're listening to you over in Iran.
I highly doubt it.
Well, anyway, this country's Ayatollah has started to use Instagram and Twitter lately, so he's going to have to knock that on the head pretty soon.
This seems like a knee-jerk reaction, if you ask me. But I don't think they've set any kind of date yet, have they? For this to go into effect.
For this particular, for the actual government ministries to go offline, yes, that's September. But when the rest of the country will be put behind their own kind of firewall, who knows?
The Great Firewall of Iran.
Yeah.
Been all right for China, I suppose, depending on who you ask. Well, there's one more thing we wanted to get to, which is kind of in relation to the last story. A coalition of online organizations wants millions of internet users to sign a declaration that promotes internet freedom and to give normal citizens the political brunt, if you like, to defeat contentious anti-internet bills like SOPA and PIPA, which we've discussed at length in recent months, and ACTA, obviously. This is called the Declaration of Internet Freedom, and we wanted to mention it specifically because I signed it this week for Wired.co.uk, which means that we are on the register for this.
So what are the kind of core principles that we've signed up to?
Okay, so the declaration carries five basic principles. Expression says that the internet can't be censored. Access promotes universal access to fast and affordable networks. Openness focuses on keeping the internet open to all. Innovation embraces new technologies and protects innovators from their users' actions. And finally, privacy defends everyone's ability to control how their data is used. They are very broad. They are certainly open to vast interpretation. For example, embracing technologies and protect innovators from their users' actions would basically say people who create file sharing sites that share torrents shouldn't be held responsible if their users download those torrents and share illegal material with it. But broadly speaking, I think all of these things are good standards to at least bear in mind when making laws, when having discussions about how policy and administration is being moved forward, even if they're not necessarily being stuck to word for word. They're kind of good guidelines to focus on. And I think it'll make a lot of sense to level-headed net users as well, which is why we've signed it.
Yeah, and I imagine Iran won't be running to sign this one.
There are, to my extent, there are no signatures from the Iranian government on this. But it's been started by Free Press and over 1,500 organizations and academics and founders of startups, tech innovators have put their name to it. This includes the Electronic Frontier Foundation, no surprise there, Mozilla, the foundation that makes Firefox, and obviously us as well as many others. So whether it makes a difference or not is another matter. But I think we saw with the defeat of ACTA in the European Parliament that that defeat sort of owes something of a debt of gratitude to the activism of people who opposed the law, because it was seen as being such a behind closed doors and misguided law that it took people speaking up and writing about it and tweeting about it and you know, coming up with web pages that highlight the downsides. And that was, we saw that, there were quotes to that effect, that was a big factor as why ACTA never went through.
Yeah.
So it does make a difference.
And it's quite interesting to give something of these bills and protests against things like ACTA a kind of home under one big kind of overarching organization.
Yeah, definitely. And it's something that you can put your name to as well as a citizen or as a business, as a company like we have done. If you go to internetdeclaration.org, you'll find all the details, though, over there. And let us know if you do sign up and why. That is going to tie a little ribbon around our show, Liv, for this week. Pop it in Santa's sack and send it to children around the world.
Bit early.
Not
for some supermarkets.
We'll see. No. How do those kids get in touch when they want to tell us how good their presents are?
In all sorts of ways. Yeah. They can send carrier pigeons.
Okay.
Just say Wired and they know where to come. Or you can follow us on Twitter. We're at Wired UK. And we also have a fantastic Facebook page, facebook.com/WiredUK. And you can catch us on Skype for free. Just call Wired UK Podcast, all one word.
Awesome-o. Duncan will be back next week.
He will.
He will. As will I. As will you.
I will.
So we will catch you on the flip side, everybody.
Bye. I ate such a big dinner last night that I woke up and I wasn't hungry.
You were still full.